Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the one reality whose traces we see underneath all of it.
That's right. And one reality is what we have here, isn't it? Well, two realities.
Yeah. Well.
Episode number 34 is this one. And yep. We're going to talk Coraline by Neil Gaiman. Which
is a children's book.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, when I first read this book, I remember reading a quote by Gaiman, and I found it on his website. Mm-hmm. It says, "It was a story I learned when people began to read it that children experienced as an adventure, but which gave adults nightmares. It's the strangest book I've written. It took the longest time to write, and it's the book I'm proudest of."
And I think that's really, all perfectly accurate. Because I'm the one who chose the book, and a few weeks ago I would have laughed to think of that, because I tried reading it when it came out, and I have a spotty record with Neil Gaiman. Some of his stuff I love, and some of it I'm like, eh. Mm-hmm. And my favorite actually being Neverwhere and also Anansi Boys.
Are those on Neverwhere? Did you ever see the BBC series?
No, I've heard it's really good, but you know, with mm-hmm. books I love, I don't tend to watch the TV or movies from mm-hmm. them because it messes up the thing in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, I came at it the other way. I saw it first.
Okay.
And then listened to an audiobook that I think was actually I listened to the unabridged version too because it came out later. But yeah, really enjoyed Neverwhere.
Well, and Gaiman had a long or longish time as a graphic novel writer, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And then Neverwhere was his first book after that, I think, and that's when I encountered him.
I see.
And just as a book, as belonging to the science fiction book club, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was when I would just take a flyer on stuff, or a lot of times I'll use it and go to the library look at books. But anyway, so he's done all these other books, and then he suddenly started branching out and writing children's books.
Yeah.
And I tried Coraline and got partway into it and said, wow, I really don't like Coraline herself.
Hmm.
And so I just quit. It wasn't that I found it creepy. I was like, I'm uninterested in this story, and this child annoys me. And then a few weeks ago, I was on SFF Audio with Jesse and a few other people, including Heather from Craftlit. And mm-hmm. we were talking about a short story called The New Mother by Lucy Clifford, and that was written in the late 1800s, I believe. And that story is one that Neil Gaiman says inspired this.
Huh.
That's why Jesse was urging us to read it so we could also talk about it. And I really did not want to read it, but I'm really glad that he kept gently urging it, because I wound up listening to Neil Gaiman reading it, and he is a wonderful narrator of his own books.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah, and that's how I read Coraline in print the first time I read it, mm-hmm. and I think it was the year that it was nominated for a Hugo, which I believe it won.
And deservedly so.
Yeah, because it's novella length.
Right.
The audiobook is almost 4 hours long.
Yeah.
And this time I listened to the audio. And man, yeah, he's one of the authors that he could read other people's stuff.
Yes.
And make a very good living.
Well, and even as I was listening to this, there's one point where he's saying something in the stepmother's voice, or the new mother's voice,
mm-hmm.
or the other mother's,
voice. Yeah.
That's what they call her.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it in a twinkling, cheerful kind of way. And I knew at the moment I heard that, I thought, this is where hearing the author saying something is so valuable for knowing what he meant, because I never would have read it that way in the book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I won't say what it was because I don't want to spoil it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly, I guess what we should do is say the book is about a little girl who, it's the end of the summer holidays, and her parents both work at home as independent contractors or freelance people.
Mm-hmm.
So she has no one to play with. And the people in her neighborhood are rather odd. and she's bored. So she dutifully does the things her parents suggest to do, you know, count everything that's blue or whatever. And one day she sees a door in her house that she's never noticed. And her mother says, well, it doesn't go anywhere. See, she unlocks it and there's brick behind it because it used to be, when the place wasn't flats, when it was a house, that door went somewhere. They bricked it up. Mm-hmm. But the mother leaves the door unlocked. And she hears something kind of creepy that night and hears little, or dreams about a song. And the next day when she's really bored, she starts receiving odd warnings from unusual sources. Don't go through the door. Isn't that it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's really bored.
Yeah, the guy upstairs gives her a message, and I thought that was kind of a cool detail. Because he's got a mouse circus upstairs.
Right.
And he says, hey, my mice have a message for you. Don't do it.
That's it.
Yeah, don't go through the door.
Yeah.
And he kept calling her Caroline.
They all call her Caroline, mm-hmm. not Coraline. Not Coraline. And then right. the two old ladies who live down the street with their little Scotty, she goes over and has tea with them, and they read the tea leaves, and you're going to be in some great danger. We can't tell what it is, but it's very grave.
Yeah.
And then they give her
that rock with the hole in it.
Right. They give her a rock with a hole in it just as this might help you, but no other reason. And they're so odd, you don't know what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't really relate to any of those people, so she doesn't really pay much attention because most people wouldn't. And then she decides she's so bored she's going to go through that door. And she finds another family there on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody who looks just like her mother and who looks just like her father. And the only difference is they have buttons, black buttons for eyes, which is a particularly nasty detail, I thought.
Yeah, that just gives you the creeps, doesn't it? I mean,
Yeah. Because something messing with your eyes is disgusting.
Yeah. Yep.
And,
go ahead.
They cook her a delicious dinner, which her father's always trying to do gourmet stuff, and she won't eat it. And mm-hmm. She has a wonderful time. It's a very interesting place. She goes all around. And when she comes home, her parents are gone. And I guess that's where we should stop, huh?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
Or for the moment to
say. For the moment, right.
You want to read it, because it's in one sense predictable, because he is telling a story, a children's classic type story. But in the other sense, it's very unique and inventive. And I'd say this story has a stronger sense of a real deep understanding of good and evil and our place in it in the world, especially from a Christian and Catholic point of view, than I've ever encountered from him before.
Yeah.
You may not feel the same way.
No, I feel the same way. You know, there's a lot in there that I felt exactly the same way as you. And Neil Gaiman, if you haven't read him before, he's one of the authors out there that is unique. Mm-hmm. When you read a Neil Gaiman book, you're like, this is Neil Gaiman. You know, and there aren't a lot of writers like that, and he's one of them. And, you know, the Sandman comics that he did are very worthwhile as well, and kind of for the same reason. You know, he deals a lot in mythology and good and evil, and I haven't read all of them. I've only read three of the volumes, but
mm-hmm.
I will eventually get to all the rest because they're incredibly interesting. And I'm not much of a graphic novel reader, but they're really something else.
And I tried them a long time ago after I'd heard that he did those also or first. And I think I picked up the wrong one to try.
Mm.
So I need to look at the library and see what they've got, because I'm sure they have them.
Yeah, I'm sure that they do. Yeah. Our local library, not the one in my small town, but the closest big town had them all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm sure Dallas does.
Definitely. I'm sure they do too.
But that's why I chose this book, because I thought some of the things he said as I was listening to him reading, I just suddenly was like, that is absolutely a truth. Mm. That is a truth of life for a Christian especially. And that's when I was like, wow, there's a subtext here that it goes along with, you know, story with a capital S for one thing. And he loves story. Yeah. He's good at getting at the truth of things. But this just has a theme that, you know, when he says he's the proudest of it, I can see why. It's, to me, it was just brilliantly done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it's interesting that it took him a very long time to write.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess it was just kind of out there for years.
Well, you hear about that, where people have an interesting idea and they pick something up and then they, not really ready to work on this, or it's not coming together. Excuse me. I could see that. Yeah. So I guess
I remember somebody asked him once, you know, how do you deal with writer's block? You know, writers get a lot of those questions. And he said, I cheat. I just work on something else.
Yeah. Which isn't really cheating.
And go somewhere else. Yeah. That's what he said, though.
Yeah.
That's how he put it.
Yeah. Well, I saw somebody talking about writer's block. And of course, I don't write fiction, as we've said before, but to me, that's the thing. I'm like, is there such a thing as writer's block? Or is it just not being willing to scribble down the crappy stuff that's coming to you until something breaks free? I don't know. Maybe that's what they call writer's block.
I think it's an indicator that you aren't into your story anymore. So you need to maybe back up and find where you lost it.
Yeah, because I can see just from writing things that most people wouldn't think of having writer's block on, but, you know, just involved posts for my blog sometimes where I'm like, I've got to write something down about this. If you just kind of let it go a little bit, all of a sudden these other things will come in and influence you, you know, and you suddenly go, oh, now this has so much more depth and here's a whole nother angle I hadn't thought of.
Yeah.
Or for some of the ghostwriting I've done for people, that kind of thing.
So, yeah. Very
so,
neat.
Shall we dive into?
We shall. You bet.
Details.
Yep.
Spoiler
Absolutely.
Territory.
Spoiler territory. So yeah. So the the whole other world really has an interesting quality, and it's very uncomfortable.
Yes.
Very uncomfortable, and there are things, you know, times where you just think, or I thought, you know, Coraline, just get out of there, you know, but she doesn't. She's not that afraid, you know?
Well,
and I think it's probably uncomfortable for adults because this is a kid, you know, this is something I don't know if I've talked about on this podcast before, but I used to absolutely love horror movies. I watched a whole bunch of those. Right. Mm-hmm. And then when I had kids, my enjoyment of those movies changed because I could no longer sit and watch a horror movie and enjoy it. And it came with the kids, you know? So, and I think that that's probably why this book is uncomfortable for an adult, because it's all happening to Coraline. Mm-hmm. And Coraline looks at things like, oh, isn't that interesting? Or, you know, she reasons in her head, you know, I know that this lady's not my mother. And you're always hearing that in her head. But at the same time, I'm like, leave. You know, just go. Yeah. And she's like, well, you know, she's not going to, you know, it's like she's not going to hurt me or anything. I'm just going to stay here and talk to her.
Yeah. It's like, what is wrong with you, girl?
Yeah. Yeah. But
well,
as an adult, you want your kids to get out of there.
Right. And I think that's something that all people experience, that you can't. It's like getting married or a lot of the other milestones in life. You see it from the other side before you've experienced it and you think you know what it is. And then you really fall deeply, deeply in love. You really get married. You really have kids. You really do all these various, one of your parents dies. All these things, you go to the other side and you're like, it's kind of like in Coraline's world, except, of course, more concrete, but it's uncomfortable and creepy sometimes. Sometimes it's wonderful, but you can't really fully explain it to people who haven't been there yet.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what Heather Ordover and I experienced when we were reading The New Mother to talk about with Jesse. You know, Jesse, such a great guy, works with kids because he's a teacher, but he doesn't have his own children. And Heather and I exchanged a couple of emails at the very beginning of this talking about how, well, we've gone through this before. As parents, things will creep us out that don't creep out people that don't have kids. And because I was like, I can't record The New Mother for you. I'm sorry. I'm so upset that this woman, Lucy Clifford, wrote it for her children.
Mm-hmm.
Because it had absolutely no hope.
Wow.
The end of that story, those children have been, I'm just going to say, there's no hope. There's no glimmer. And we're not used to stories like that. And what upset me was I was thinking, since it was written late 1800s, that it was a moral tale she wrote for her kids. Now, in discussing it on SFF Audio, Heather having to read it out loud and kind of look at more of what was going on, she said, you know, I think maybe her kids were older and this was kind of a tongue-in-cheek. There's all these little elements. And that kind of saved the story for me. But what it made me really appreciate from Coraline, and this was an unexpected element when I first heard the book too, is the first thing you see is Neil Gaiman includes a quote from G.K. Chesterton that says, fairy tales are more than true, not because they tell us that dragons exist, but because they tell us that dragons can be beaten. So right there, he's setting forth the whole premise of the book.
Yeah, I love that quote.
Yeah. And it's, for me, it also, I was like, man, you see Catholics and Christians just quoting G.K. Chesterton everywhere. And this is one that you'll see occasionally, this quote. I also love it because it kind of echoes that idea of there's one true big story and all other stories show us bits of light of it. And to me, this story showed us a lot of that. But I thought it was interesting that he was so inspired by The New Mother, but he took it and, of course, told it in his own way. It was still creepy because that story is creepy. You're going to have to, well, when SFF Audio releases that, Heather reads it.
Okay, beautifully. Great. Yeah.
But it's creepy like this is creepy in a different way. But he echoed that creepiness very well.
Yeah. So you don't feel the same way about this book, obviously, as you did about The New Mother. And the reason is because of the hope?
Well, yeah, because the children in that are younger and more and hopeless, powerless, really. They do, the one thing they can do is not designed to help their situation. It's really a weird story.
Okay.
Basically, they're tempted to do something very naughty so that they can see something wonderful. And they're tempted and tempted to be more and more and more horribly naughty. And they're actually very good little kids, so it's difficult for them. And the mother keeps warning them, if you do this, because they tell her why, because she's like, why are you being so awful? This isn't like you. If you do this, I'm going to have to go away and a new mother will come and this is what she'll be like. And she's awful. And she's not even, it's very much like this mother. She's not really human. You don't understand what to think about her at all.
Yeah.
And they continue, they're too tempted, and she leaves, and the new mother comes. And it's awful.
Wow.
And they're abandoned. Because that mother can't come back ever, their real mother.
Wow.
So he took this and kind of looked at that whole idea, and when I think about the two stories together, I never really realized that he, the creepiness that adults hate, you know, because kids don't think about stuff the same way. And that's what I forget, you know, they'll look at it and let it slide over them. Buttons for eyes. Huh? Okay. but he took it and he made it human again. You know, he sends Coraline to that world, but then she comes back having saved everybody.
Right. Yeah. And Coraline is the actor in this book. I mean, she's the main character. I think she's in every scene. So she's not passive at all.
No. And she has plenty of chances to be passive. Although when she goes back and her parents are gone and she tries to, you know, be independent. Oh, I'm fine. I'll take my pocket money and buy some stuff. And then finally she breaks down and cries. She has to admit she's not as independent as she'd like to think. She loves her parents. She wants them back.
Yeah.
And there's that horrible ghost scene of them in the mirror.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Having to fog up the breath and write backwards in it, help us, you know, or save us, whichever it is.
Yeah. 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 And well, there was a really interesting scene where, okay, Coraline goes to this other place and she meets the other mother who's, you know, sickeningly sweet, and mm-hmm. say, oh, you want to stay here? You know, don't you want to stay here? Here's food you like and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Coraline leaves and the other mother lets her go. And yeah. that was a surprising thing to me. But the other mother was just sitting there going, you'll be back. You know, can't wait to see you again. And you're like, holy yeah. cow. So Coraline goes back and then she discovers that her parents are missing. Mm-hmm. You know, she waits a while and she realizes, oh, wow, they're not here anymore. So she has to go back because she knows where they are. Yeah. And when she goes back, she starts to think about this thing that her dad did for her once. Her dad yes. was, they were tromping through the woods or whatever, and they got attacked by wasps. And her dad stood there for a little bit so that the wasps would sting him while she ran, and then he ran. You know, he just
yeah.
waited just enough time for the wasps to be getting him instead of her. And then, but that's not the thing, but right. then he had to go back to where the wasps were because he lost his glasses. And she comments that, now that's what brave is. Brave is not dealing with a situation that's thrust upon you. Bravery is going back into that situation when you know how bad it's going to be. And you go anyway.
Right.
And she says, that's what I'm about to do. And she opens the door and goes back in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's
I really liked that.
The cat.
Yeah, telling the cat.
She has one. She has one friend, and he's not really a friend, because the thing I love about this cat is very honest to how a cat is.
Mm, yeah.
You know, it will talk to her, and it knows that they have more in common than anybody else in that world. And in the mysterious ways of cats, it can come and go practically invisibly because it knows all the little nooks into the other mother's world. But it's doesn't really, you know, it's not a friendly cat. It's not her buddy. It's not like, let's all help you get out, Coraline. It's
and it's willing that's to give like her cats hints. Often are. You know, they can take you or leave you.
Yeah.
It's like, it's where have you hints. Been? Where have you been?
Yeah.
Put something in this bowl for me, would you?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then get out of here.
Like, yeah, well, you don't answer your names. Well, those names are for you. We don't need our names. We know yeah. who we are.
That made me laugh out loud, you know.
And then it says, cats, well, you know, they... you call us for dinner. Well, mm-hmm. dinner's all you have to call, isn't it? We know. Just say dinner's there.
Yeah.
That's the proof. So
yeah.
I loved that it's a simple cry of dinner would do nicely. See? No need for names. And mm-hmm. it will talk to her. And in the end, the way the cat's able to help her is that it reacts exactly like a cat when she throws it at the other mother's face. Mm-hmm. And it's, wah, because it's terrified of the other mother and she's blocked up all the exits and it can't get out.
Yeah,
so Coraline has to save everyone.
Yeah, I was shocked, I must say, that that cat forgave Coraline for that. You know, I thought that was the yeah. end of their relationship.
Yeah, when they get back
she throws the cat at the other mother, and the cat had no idea she was going to do it.
Yeah, that's
the
rawr.
Other mother's like, yeah, scratching. Just scratching the other mother's face. She grabs the snow globe, runs through the passage, and says, "Come on!"
Right.
And you saw the cat later, you know,
right.
in the other world, in the real world, I guess, and the cat forgave her.
Yeah, she apologizes because, of course, in our world, the cat can't talk, but
right,
you know, it would
right.
blink at her, which is what cats do
mm-hmm.
if you're being friendly. I don't know if you have a cat. I can't remember.
Yeah, I
now.
Do. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that blinking thing they do, that affectionate
yep.
thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yep. Yeah, I love the cat character. It was
yeah,
really
the
good.
The cat was great because it would give her helpful hints, but it was kind of from a disinterested point of view. Well, you know, I think she wants something to love. Try this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or yeah. maybe something to eat. They're kind right. of the same sometimes. You're just like, oh, you are such a cat.
Yeah, yeah.
No. And they right. use the, and at the very end, they use the cat's propensity to play with its food. Says, see, this isn't always horrible, is it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so.
Yeah, if we get into the truths of the thing, one moment that stuck out at me was when the other mother said, you know, I love you. And
yes.
Coraline had to say, I know that you do. But then in her head, you know, it's just like, you know, in the English language, you know, we don't have enough words for love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have one word that means a whole bunch of different things. But she said, and I just wrote this down, you know, from the audio, so I don't have the whole quote, but it says, the other mother loved Coraline like a miser loves money or a dragon loves gold.
Right.
Coraline was a possession and nothing more. And Coraline was, you know, wise enough to understand this. Yes, she does love me, and I understand that, but this is mm-hmm. how she does it. She loves me as a possession.
Right, because I was just jotting that note down, not about that, but that's what I was thinking of, that section. It's a counterfeit love.
Mm-hmm.
It's from someone who doesn't understand what real love is.
Right.
Like the real mother.
Mm-hmm.
And Coraline knows the difference because she's experienced both.
Yeah, and she's wise enough to know the difference. And she knew it from the very beginning, too.
Mm-hmm.
She was never caught by this other mother.
Yeah.
Never once was she like, oh, you know what? I think that I really want to stay here. She never felt that way.
And it's something that if we have experienced it enough, you can get lost, like in that other world, and think that mistake false emotions like that
mm-hmm.
for something bigger. Or yeah. I guess it's not a false emotion.
I think it's a common mistake people make all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they get enamored with something or someone that's not
right.
genuine.
Well, it made me think of Tom and I were having a conversation just a couple nights ago about somebody a client of ours who has a real problem with drinking.
Hmm.
Like, it's probably that they never are not a little bit buzzed. And mm-hmm. you don't see that much these days, but I think, or at least it's not so noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
But what we were talking about is you would drink that much to help hide from yourself or help anesthetize yourself to something that's really broken and to help yourself, you know, have the courage to go on. And then in this person's case, we thought maybe, and not knowing that much about him, but we're just like, why do you do that? And we're like, well, because eventually you've believed the lie. You've forgotten that it was just to kind of help you get by or numb you to something that's really bad or broken. And you start to think that, oh, I can handle this. I can drink and do business. I can drink and handle this. And it's obvious to everyone you can't, but you've lied. It's like this other mother.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is, you know, how I should be. I don't know if that makes
sense. That's a really cool way to look at that. Yeah. Because I can see how that correlates.
Yeah. And we felt really sorry for him. I was like, I've got to remember to pray for this guy more often because, you know, that's just a sad situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's what, you know, evil does in our lives, too.
Right.
I mean, it entices us with things that are destructive. You know, didn't Coraline say somewhere in there, you know, but I don't want everything I want.
Yes.
You know, so the other mother is trying to entice her to stay. And she's like, oh, you're going to get to eat whatever you want. And I will give you everything you want. And I'll even rebuild the world for you every day. So you have really cool things to play with. And she's like, well, I don't want everything I want. How good would that be for me not to want anything?
I have and again, it. You know,
okay.
It says, because she's speaking through the mirror image of the old man who lives upstairs with the mice
that's
in the real world. But this is a guy who lives upstairs with rats.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, every meal will be a thing of joy, whispered the voice from under the old man's hat. Nothing will pass your lips that does not entirely delight you. And could I have day-glow green gloves to wear and yellow Wellington boots in the shapes of frogs? Asked Coraline. Frogs, ducks, rhinos, octopuses, whatever you desire. The world will be built new for you every morning. If you stay here, you can have whatever you want. Coraline sighed. You don't really understand, do you? She said. I don't want whatever I want. Nobody does. Not really. What kind of fun would it be if I just got everything I ever wanted, just like that, and it didn't mean anything? What then? I don't understand, said the whispery voice. Of course you don't understand, she said, raising the stone with the hole in it to her eye. You're just a bad copy she made of the crazy old man upstairs.
Yeah.
And it's that, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, when I was listening to that the first, you know, just the other day, I was thinking about, you know, Jesus led into the desert by the devil, you know, the same as Lent. But he, you know, he was tempted with power and things. But
food
he also,
though.
Yeah, food was also part of it, which is what made me think about it.
Yeah, and I didn't think of that.
Yeah, so it was interesting.
Well, and this ties into when she says, you're just a bad copy of that crazy old man upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Because at one point she says that evil can't create anything new. It just twists what's there for its own purposes. Let's see.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, said Coraline. I'm not frightened, she told herself. And as she thought it, she knew that it was true. There was nothing here that frightened her. These things, even the thing in the cellar, were illusions. Things made by the other mother in a ghastly parody of the real people and real things on the other end of the corridor. She could not truly make anything, decided Coraline. She could only twist and copy and distort things that already existed. And that's just, that struck me as I was listening, when I listened, so absolutely true. And I never thought of tying it in with Christ being tempted in the desert. And you're right, because that's what the devil's doing, and that's what Jesus is able to, you know, he's got, in essence, it's the stone with the hole in it. He's got that true focus that shows him absolute truth of, no, I don't need bread, you know, I don't need power, I don't need these things. I need only to be obedient to my Father's will, because he's the true Father, and he loves me, and he wants what's best for me, even if it's hard.
Yeah.
Oh, Scott, so good on you. Because that just helped bring it even more into focus for me.
Yeah, it's, and then the whole idea about the other mother not being able to create anything, that's kind of a Christian viewpoint of evil, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, completely.
Yeah, so the, you know, the fact that evil, all it can do is manipulate and try to convince you of things that aren't true. Again, just like the other mother's trying to do. So, yeah, this is a really interesting portrayal of evil. You know, just like you were saying at the beginning, this is good and evil, but his evil is fascinating evil and very realistic.
Yeah, it's got that core of truth. And when it's going to lose, it lies. It will do anything. You can't trust it.
Right.
Just like the other mother, who's, of course, lying when she makes the deal with Coraline about winning the game, and she'll let her out. Because that's the thing that you were saying before about knowing what's true and knowing what's not, is you can only lie to yourself for so long. And although evil twists the truth, it just made me think that, wow, we're human beings, from the Christian point of view, are in such a unique position in terms of we were created to be co-creators with God.
Hmm.
You know, Adam in the garden is, now you'll work the land. And it's not as a punishment, it's as a joy and a delight. Because it's, you know, people tend to think, oh, I work and it's hard. And if you believe in what the Bible says, well, it's because of original sin. And no, it was meant to be joyful. Creation of something is a joy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's what we can appreciate in our kids when we see them do something unique. It's what, you know, like writing or painting or cooking, or, you know, it's that when you're totally absorbed in it. And Satan, although all-powerful angel, the greatest of the angels, we're told, he can't do anything like that. That's not what he was created for.
Yeah, that's fascinating stuff.
Yeah. It's another thing through that stone with the hole in it.
Right, right.
Yeah,
Yesterday, you know, we passed just a couple of emails really quick. We didn't talk too much, but I really want to hear you talk about it. Near the end, she manages to save her parents. And we talked about how she threw the cat on the other mother's face and everything, and boom, 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 gets out of there. But the story isn't over.
Yeah, she's yeah. also, we haven't really talked about this, but there are the souls of three other children there mm-hmm. that the other mother had lured away and sucked all the life out of them, which made me think of her as a big spider.
Yeah.
And yeah. although
and
that's
he,
never
And
really
he said, yeah, that's something else. I mean, it was the whole book in a nutshell when Coraline's, didn't she say something near the beginning about how spiders made her intensely uncomfortable?
Yes.
Yeah.
And,
that's what this whole book is.
Like a web that she spun.
Yeah.
Well, and then at the end when her hand has been cut off and it's scuttling around
yeah.
trying to get that
and
key,
it's a
you're
spider.
Just like, oh,
and
that's
you can just,
imagine,
you know,
it, but worse.
Yeah, Coraline had to be just...
attacking the dog. And,
yeah.
Well, so... the thing is, yeah, so she has... She's gotten the children's souls.
Mm-hmm.
And she's... put them under her pillow to keep them safe, and she's got a wonderful dream where she's with the three children and they're having a picnic and they're playing games, and they're it's just a like a dream. It'll go from one thing to the other, but it's also very real. And then one of them says, "It's a very fine thing you did for us, miss," said the tall girl. She now had a smear of chocolate ice cream all around her lips. "I'm just pleased it's all over," said Coraline. Was it her imagination, or did a shadow cross the faces of the other children at the picnic? And then the children say, "Well, for us, we're going to keep going on. This is our staging post, but you're still alive." And a little bit later it says, let's see, shoot, now I've lost it. That basically, they basically tell her, "You're not done."
Yeah, yeah.
And she says, "But it's not fair," said Coraline in her dream angrily. "It's just not fair. It should be over." The boy with the dirty face stood up and hugged Coraline tightly. "Take comfort in this," he whispered. "Thou'rt alive. Thou livest." Then they walk and fly away, and she wakes up, and the little marbles that had the souls are all broken open, and she hears something that sounds like a rat.
Right.
And so then she says to herself, "It isn't over, is it?" she said to herself. So she knows she's got to fight the other mother's hand that wants the key back.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, was another thing that rang so true in that, you know, you I think human beings, we're like, okay, we've done this job, now we're done. And in spiritual progress, there's no such thing. If you stop moving forward, you slide backward. It's like we're in a gently moving current. And if we swim forward and make a certain amount of effort, we can make some progress. It doesn't have to be a lot. Just a little at a time is fine. That's how it's meant to be a lot of the time. But if you just think, "Oh, now I'm just going to drift because I've done this. My prayer is good. I'm living a good life. My family's good. I'm showing the right exertion." Well, something comes up very soon and messes it up if you don't keep trying. And you know, you feel like Coraline sometimes.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do I have to keep doing this?
Right. Yeah, and I feel the same way. Yeah, in my life too. You know, whenever you get content and pleased with yourself, that's what happens to me. And you're like, "Yeah, I'm doing pretty darn good." Then something happens to show you, you know, you need some effort, buddy.
Yeah, yep. While I wasn't looking, oh my gosh, I've been doing this and didn't realize it, or, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, there goes my temper again. Oh, because I quit trying.
Yeah, yeah. And there's no victory, right? It's not something that you experience in this lifetime.
No, and the real common way to describe it is... it's like climbing a mountain and you get to a plateau level. So you do have moments where you can kind of rest and go, "Oh, wow, great. You know, I've made a great effort a lot of the times."
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can sense that, "Oh, I pulled myself up over the edge and, like, you know, I had this great experience or this great thing with friends or, you know, I actually really connected with God so well just now." And you're allowed to drift a little, but if you don't keep going, there's the rest of the mountain.
Yeah.
You've got to keep trying and trying and trying.
Right, right. And it's not, you know, isn't Sisyphus the one who pushes the thing up the hill and then
yeah,
it just rolls down? And that was in Dante too, wasn't it? I think you were saying that one time, and which is something I still need to get read. But the, pushing a bowl, you know, it's not like that. It's not hellish. No. It's not hellish.
No.
It's just that you're not finished. You know, and if you were finished, again, like Coraline says, you know, what would it be like not to, or I don't want everything I want.
Right.
Without those desires and stuff, you won't keep going. So,
right.
Yeah, well, it's never finished.
Yeah, and sometimes the work in itself is a joy. I mean,
right, and that's, and if it's not, you need to change what you're doing.
Right. Well, yeah, or, you know, if we're talking about things like prayer or trying mm-hmm. to practice the virtues or whatever it is that we're kind of striving for to, you know, follow more in those footsteps. But mm-hmm. the other thing is sometimes you can't help it. It's like I keep thinking of that mountain example, and that kind of works with Coraline having the picnic. You know, she'd slogged up that hard part of the mountain. Well, you've overcome something awful in your life. For me, when my father is dying, or, you know, sometimes you just have to put your head down and keep plowing on.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. those are things you just can't control. You just have to trust that, okay, there's a horrible storm around me. I've got my, you know, my hat's pulled down. I'm going to keep going up against this awful storm that's trying to blow me off the mountain. Oh, I got the plateau. Oh, thank goodness I can rest. Well, now it's time to get up and keep walking some more. So those are the hard times, and those are bad, or you're fighting an addiction or something like that. But the other times, like you're saying, it's more of a gentle stroll. It's just always upward.
Right.
You know, you've got your stick to help you, and you've got the snacks in your backpack or whatever. It doesn't mean you can't stop and have a drink, but you've got to keep striving. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people aren't Christian or have some kind of faith, if they're listening to this, they're probably just going, what the what? But that's part mm-hmm. of having a routine of prayer life, at least, you know, sometimes set aside, even if nothing seems to be happening.
Yeah.
Of trying to practice, as St. Jose Maria Escriva would say, that virtuous moment or the heroic moment of, no, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to stop by the store on the way home and do this, even though I don't want to, because it'll be better for everyone, you know.
Yeah.
Denying yourself.
Yeah, I kind of had an experience the other day where, because of how busy I've been, you know, well, you know the story, you know, you just get so busy that what you neglect are the things that feed your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you start to kind of go through a downward spiral.
Right.
And then for me, it was just picking up on Monday morning, listening to Pray As You Go for the first time in probably 2 months. And put that in my ear and listen to that and give it your full attention. And
mm-hmm.
man, it's just energizing. And it kind of puts your mind right.
You know, and it's funny because that's a resource I turn to a lot when I'm doing that same thing myself. When I'm like, you know what? I'm casting around. Nothing's really working. And I have my regular times for prayer, but I have to change it up. Sometimes mm-hmm. I go for a walk, but then I find I've gotten myself into a routine where I'm not actually praying. I'm using it as a time to organize my day ahead. And so then I need to spend that time doing it in a different way. But it always, I use Pray As You Go so many times to kind of rejuvenate things.
Yeah.
It's 5 or 10 minutes, but it makes you pay attention and reach out and, oh, well, kind of open up, I guess, to God in a way that you don't mm-hmm. usually. They can surprise me sometimes.
Yeah.
They ask those questions and you just go, I never thought of that.
Yeah. And that's what I like about it is, you know, you get this little piece of scripture, one of the daily readings, and then it, they ask you something and I'm like, well, that's not what I was thinking about when you said that. Sometimes they say, talk to God about what you thought about, you know, when you heard that passage. But mm-hmm. often they say, what do you think that this person felt in that passage? You know, what was it like? I really enjoy the ones, you know, they say, what was it like for this person in that mm-hmm. scene? And that's interesting stuff. But yeah, I notice, you know, at times, especially at this time, and I have to chuckle, but it's like, you know, so, you know, I say Our Fathers throughout the day, mm-hmm. you know, and every now and then I go, you know, Our Father who art in heaven has, and then I'm off. I'm thinking about something else, you know.
Right.
And that's, if I could just use that to trigger, you know, to tell myself something, But I have to do that for like 2 weeks before I stop and say, you know, I need to slow down and at least take some time here and sit here. It's funny that it's not an immediate, you know, hey, Scott, you're not paying any attention. You know, it's just like this routine. And you're right. If you mix it up, that helps you. It helps you see what your routines are.
And a lot of times for me, what really triggers it more than, and I think everybody has different triggers. For some people, it's music.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, it's, I don't know, actually like saying the rosary or something. But for me, it is what I'm reading spiritually. And I will have to shift in and out of, I've got two or three different devotionals. It's a combination of what I'm reading. And sometimes it's a devotional. Sometimes it's just a book someone else has written about, you know, something spiritual. And sometimes it's what I'm writing. And I've discovered if I'm not working on a writing project, then it's a funny thing how I become less engaged in prayer because my mind isn't being forced to think about it
mm-hmm.
really deeply or something. You know, and it's, and like I say, it's nothing a lot of people would care about. Sometimes it's just stuff that I might write a blog post about. Sometimes it's an idea that I'm just going, oh, I'll just jot all this down. But it's because what that makes me do is become very, very open to the influences of what I'm reading in terms of whether it's a review book or like finishing up Genesis for the podcast and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It all becomes synthesized in a way that I think that's kind of part of being the co-creator with God. Actively engaging in it too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For me, audio is, I just love audio. So it's always the thing that shakes me and makes me think more deeply is always like a little piece of a talk someone's given or a podcast mm-hmm. or something. Not too long ago, I listened to a talk by Peter Kreeft.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you say his last name? Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah.
It was called If Einstein Was a Surfer. Because he believed that if Einstein had been a surfer, he would have discovered the whole unifying theory of the universe.
He loves the sea.
Yeah, he loves the sea. Kreeft does, yeah.
Yes, yes.
But he was talking about love and creation. And he kind of introduced me to the idea that, you know, gravity could be one manifestation of God's love. He said, isn't it interesting that all of these particles in the universe, all they want to do is be with each other. You know, and that's what gravity is they want to.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, how interesting is that?
That is, I'm actually may have to plop down the coin to listen to that talk now.
Yeah. Yeah. I got it, on Audible, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just a couple of dollars or something.
I think he's selling a couple through iTunes.
No, that's what I meant. iTunes is what I meant. I apologize. But yeah, iTunes. Yeah. Right.
Well, also, he's got a bunch of talks, just FYI for anyone listening, on his website that are, you know, sometimes poorly recorded because they're talks he gave at schools. But they're all very good. And the one that this makes me think of is he wrote one about the sea. Hmm. And, you know, I think you might find, because I heard echoes of what he said about that, but he loves the ocean. And he talked there about, you know, the constant motion of the waves coming in. And that sounds very trite, but somehow the way he talked about it, you just were carried out into this world of, I think it was a place where you could touch God in prayer because it just opened my mind to a different way to think. I don't listen to it very often because I don't want to spoil it for myself, you know, by constant repetition.
Yeah.
But that's something else I'll go back to. You know?
Yeah, sure
but,
enough.
You know, but it's different things for different people because the thing that can also get me is when I haven't been walking for a while, I'll forget to ever go outside. And, you know, in modern life, in a big city, you can go a long time without really stepping outside except in a parking lot to go to the store or something. You're driving to work, you're driving to the store, you're driving home, you're this and you're that. We've got a dog door. I don't even have to take the dogs out. My husband gets the paper, which is thrown onto our sidewalk. I mean, but when I go for that walk, I'll find myself doing something like, I didn't realize it's snail time right now, but evidently it is.
And that's something else, because I had a similar experience. It must have been about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, where I felt exactly like you're describing. And I walked to work. It takes me a half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But I just walked to work, and it's just the change of perspective that gives you. Not only is it contemplative time, you know, mm-hmm. if you want it to be, but just the fact of being outside and walking this route that you usually drive, but seeing stuff, you know, you see this, you see that, and this person's house, and that cat, or like you said, that snail, mm-hmm. it's really mm-hmm. something else. And the way that I walk to work is I take railroad tracks at one point. It's kind of a shortcut. I walk straight down, and then I take railroad tracks, and it takes about a 10-minute walk along the tracks, which the railroad people probably do not like. But
yeah. Well, just keep your ears open.
Yeah, but it's cool to, you know, it's just a perspective shift. And I think that that's very, very helpful.
Yeah.
I think it really helps a person to experience things in a different way.
Well, it is. And I have to say, I think we've talked about this before, where I've said Tom especially is really into walking to work right now. And I mm-hmm. kind of quit, because it's kind of scary on our way to work in some ways. I've got to cross a 6-lane highway.
Mm, yeah.
There's a light for it, but the drivers are not very considerate. You've really got to keep your eyes open. Also, between that highway on the other side and our work are a couple of apartment buildings. Well, one whole set of them, I feel sure, is government mm-hmm. funded apartment buildings. And it's not that I've seen anything definitely bad, but the apartments on the other side have always hired police officers, you know, so it kind of makes you go, oh, what the hell is going on around here?
Yeah.
And after school, I encounter a lot of quite large, scary kids. And I'm sorry to say it like that, but it's, you know, they're these high school kids. It's pretty obvious they don't care about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Especially some white lady walking to work, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. And, but what that makes me do is, you want to talk about leaning on your guardian angel and saying, you know what? This is ridiculous of me to be afraid of these people just because I never walk among them.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens then is I start, you know, I'll just meet people's eyes and I'll smile. I don't care if I'm supposed to or not. And those kids, most of them don't pay attention, but some do. You know, mm-hmm. smile back, or just kind of at least nod their head at me or something.
Yeah.
And it's another sign of me of, oh, I'm drifting backwards. How can I become isolated through fear? How can, you know, I'm living a life that's about as safe as any life can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when I remember to start off going, okay, I am counting on you, guardian angel, to help me look in the right way and this and that, and I'm just not going to worry about it. This is not my job. I will look everywhere and I will do everything. You protect me. Well, whether that happens or not, based on what somebody else chooses to do, I can't help. But what I can do is be like Coraline.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I think about it, I'm afraid, whether rightly or wrongly, I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a remarkable thing about Coraline. You know, why do you think it is that you didn't like her the first time you were through it? Or do you like her now?
I'm not fond of her.
Okay.
Like I would be of a lot of, like, you know, Salman Darjeeling, when we mm-hmm. read that for SFF, I was quite fond of them. Even G, who is a little more annoying, but, I admire Coraline. I find her strong and a good person. And I think the Coraline that was at the end of the book, the one who would sit with the cat and the one who is more engaged with her parents
mm-hmm.
as people mm-hmm. than just as I'm bored. You know, she's had to stop and go, oh, I love them for no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I probably, reading her story going forward, I would like her a lot better. So I wonder if she's missing something too, because the current world she was in at the beginning of the book is creepy also.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah, she's in that flat with someone downstairs and someone upstairs. Yeah. And they're odd people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she's just not... And it's not all her fault. I mean, but mm-hmm. her parents, like her father does the gourmet cooking, and she'll just go microwave a pizza.
Yeah.
So they're not mm-hmm. really a functional family in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they don't love each other. They do.
Mm-hmm.
As we see. But at the end of the book, you know, she's eating whatever. She doesn't care because it doesn't, the food's not what counts. And it actually was good.
Yeah.
Except for the pineapple chunks on the pizza. You know,
right.
It didn't matter that the pizza dough wasn't cooked through all the way. What mattered is that, what better a dinner of bitter herbs where love is than a feast where hate is, or, you know, people I don't like are.
Yeah, yeah.
Horribly paraphrasing that.
Well, cool. Yeah.
Do you like Coraline?
I do.
Okay.
I guess, you know, at the beginning, I don't know, That scene that you mentioned with the food was interesting mm-hmm. to me, and it does say a lot about Coraline's character, because she goes into the kitchen and her dad's cooking something, and she's like, "What are you cooking?" You know, he tells her, and she's like, "Ah," and she just walks over to the thing while he's cooking, grabs that pizza and throws it in the microwave, and mm-hmm. you know, that said a whole lot about that relationship, and her dad didn't react angrily in any way.
Yeah,
he's been letting her do that. Yeah. So, but that was to me, a flaw in the parents, you know, mm-hmm. more than mm-hmm. a flaw for her. Mm-hmm. And I admired, Coraline's strength. But like I said, there were moments in the book, like when she's first dealing those first scenes with the other mother, where she knows that this is extremely creepy, but she's not getting the heck out of there. That
yeah.
I was like, well, why isn't she getting out of there? You know, why would she stay there? And so I guess I had a little bit of trouble in the belief department right there, but uh-huh. I was still fascinated with Coraline's character because she was brave. And then I really fell for her at that moment that I described with the wasps, where she was talking about
yeah.
that, and then I'm going to go back in here to get my parents, then I was really with her.
I have to say, the moment I really started falling for her more, and now that I think about it, she is much more sympathetic when she's fighting to get her parents back. I still didn't, it's not that warm, touchy-feely, but when I started going, I'm invested in Coraline, is when she was shut in that dark closet, and she was holding the little kid's hand, even though it was a dead, cold hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And so sympathetic, and then her determination, I'm not leaving anyone behind. And they get, she'd rescue a soul, and they go, you better watch out, you better hurry, she's pretty upset now. And then the second one's like, leave the third one. No, I'm not leaving anyone.
Mm.
And that moment, and then, what was it? Oh, when she's so able to empathize with the father thing, essentially, who's the slug in the basement.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's, oh, you poor thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, you better watch out, because he's being sympathetic, even though he's not in the vaguely human anymore. And he's mm-hmm. like, she wants you. And she, I can't stand up against her because she created me. And she's like, try really hard. You can do it. And I was like, oh. You know, this was a dimension to her character that she cared about, you hate to say any living thing, but she did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she invested part of herself in all those people who she had no reason to, but she was naturally sympathetic to them. And that was a side of her tough, uncaring character
mm-hmm.
that I really liked.
Yeah.
You know, that's the side that understood what she had to do to the cat for them both to get out, but was sorry she was doing it. Even though you don't see that until later when she apologizes.
Mm-hmm.
Because she can't think about it, or the mother will know. The other mother will know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think during that scene with the father, the other father in the basement, doesn't she say something like, at least you didn't jump out and scare me, or something like that. I can't remember exactly, and that made me chuckle too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just confronted with his horrific stuff, and she's like, well...
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
And she's very tough. Well, and the thing about her being able to go and look at all that stuff that would bother us,
mm-hmm.
but I think the reason it doesn't bother Coraline, and the reason Neil Gaiman says these kids just look at it as an adventure, is because it doesn't bother kids.
Yeah.
we're looking at it going, this is a creepy parody of like those two sisters in that show they're giving for all the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But a kid wouldn't look at it that way at all. They might be just like Coraline.
Yeah.
Depending on the sensitivity of the kid. But a lot of kids would be fine with that.
Sure.
Because there's nothing really that threatening until they're doing the knife throwing trick.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a delicious meal. This is kind of creepy, but I can go right back through the door.
Yeah.
I'll go home again. It's one of those adventures like I've read about.
Mm. Did you read the Graveyard book?
I listened to it.
Listened to it. Did you enjoy it?
Liked it very much.
Yeah, me too. I was just going to recommend that to folks. Yeah. And the audio version is absolutely terrific. Just fantastic. Oh, yeah. In fact, I don't think I've read that one in print. And I think I've heard it twice because we took a trip somewhere and put it in again. But I read somewhere, so I hope this is good information, that Disney has picked up the Graveyard book and are planning to make it. And I'm not clear on whether it's going to be animated or... I hope it's animated.
Oh, gosh. I think
wouldn't it
be
cool if Pixar did that? If Pixar did the Graveyard book? Oh, that would make me happy.
Please let it have integrity.
Yeah. Did you see Coraline the movie?
No. I was going to ask if you had.
I have. I didn't watch it for this podcast, so I haven't seen it for years. But it's done in that Nightmare Before Christmas type of style. You know, which, you know, some people like and some people don't like.
I love the Nightmare Before Christmas.
Cool. Yeah. So it's got that, you know, kind of the stop motion stuff. So it's, you know, interesting to watch just for that reason.
As you recall, is it a good representation of the book? Did you care for it?
I think so. I liked the book better.
Well.
You know, that's common. But I remember liking the movie.
Yeah, I think my kids both have seen the movie, and they hadn't read the book, but they liked Coraline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that point I had read the first part of the book and gone, so I just didn't bother with the movie.
Mm, gotcha.
But I might look it up. Did you like Nightmare Before Christmas?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you said some people do or don't like it.
I know a lot of people who don't like it.
Really?
And I know a lot of people who don't like Coraline.
Well, I guess it is a style. It's a thing.
It is. It's a thing. Yeah.
You'll like it or you won't. So,
but yeah, the Graveyard book, for those who haven't heard of it is, you know how the Jungle Book was about a kid who was raised in the jungle, an orphan boy. This is about an orphan boy who's raised by ghosts in a graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So
I am glad I didn't know that until after I'd heard the book, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying. I know I'm picky about that kind of thing. I heard it later and I went, oh, yeah, I can see it. But it's not as obvious as it could be. So don't worry.
Comparing it to the Jungle Book, you mean?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't.
No, I mean, I knew I kind of knew the premise of the book when I. But it was the Jungle Book thing where I went, oh. Glad I didn't know that. I would have been paralleling things in my mind the whole time.
Oh, I see.
So,
yeah.
But it can be taken on its own. And it's interesting because that character is a very sympathetic child.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the characters that you encounter are fairly sympathetic.
Right. Yeah.
There's some obvious villains or some obvious creepy stuff. But the real obvious villain is what he's done before or what he had done before that in his books, which were, you know, the thug who's out to kill someone.
Yeah.
And you don't know why. You might find out later, but they're horrible, usually.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's, right. I highly recommend that. I haven't read it either, but I've been meaning to listen to it again.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it is good.
Really good book.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what have we got coming up?
Let's see.
A good story is hard to find.
Rear Window.
All right.
Hitchcock for the Summer.
Jimmy Stewart.
That's right. Yep. Grace Kelly in some gorgeous dresses. Oh, Thelma Ritter is the best grouchy kind of nurse ever.
Mm-hmm.
And Raymond Burr as the possible villain.
Yep.
And possibly the best voyeuristic movie ever. Looking at Human Nature, I would say.
Very neat. Yep, looking forward to that. Looking forward to it.
And so it's hot in the summer.
Yeah, and it's hot in the summer. And speaking of hot in the summer, I also picked the next book.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be The Killer Angels by Michael Shara. I hope that's how you pronounce his last name. Shaara. It's a Pulitzer Prize winning novel, historical fiction about the Battle of Gettysburg.
Wow, Pulitzer Prize winning.
Yeah.
Don't know what I've read that's Pulitzer Prize winning. What's the Pulitzer Prize anyway? It's journalism?
There's a whole bunch of them.
Okay.
There's for fiction and for journalism.
I just don't.
Whole bunch. So it won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction.
Okay. Yep. Well, then I bet To Kill a Mockingbird might be in that category.
You might be right. That might be on that list.
But, okay, so the mm-hmm. Killer Angel or Angels.
Yeah.
Okay, Civil War.
Civil War, yep. And it's Gettysburg? A terrific book. Terrific book. It's about the Battle of Gettysburg. So whole novel takes place in 3 days.
In July, you said?
In July. I believe it was early July was the Battle of Gettysburg, like July 1, 2, 3 or something like that.
Okay. So is everybody ready for a really hot, gritty summer with good stories hard to find?
You bet.
No air conditioning in any of these.
Yeah, no air conditioning in that book. Yeah. And then something fun. Picked a movie, and we're going to do The Incredibles. We talked just briefly about Pixar and when we talked about Star Trek 2, mm-hmm. which got me hankering to talk about a Pixar movie, and my favorite one is The Incredibles.
Oh, I don't know if I have a favorite, but mm-hmm. if I had a favorite, that would definitely be one of the ones I had.
Cool, yeah.
I just love that movie.
Yeah, and I love Pixar.
Oh,
just about everything they've done. I have not yet seen John Carter of Mars, which I don't know. I don't think that's an official Pixar movie, but one of the Pixar directors did.
That was Andrew Stanton.
Yeah.
Who did WALL-E?
Yeah.
And
right.
Toy Story, or one of the Toy Stories, maybe.
Yeah, WALL-E was fantastic.
Well, and I just saw Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol, which was directed by Brad Bird, who directed.
Yeah. How do you like them apples? that's an incredible thing. Yeah, to go from animation, because he came from animation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the animator, and they put him in charge of the Ghost Protocol. That's amazing.
Well, it was perfect actually for him because we could talk about this later, but he loves to do these chase sequences, and of course, nothing better for Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
than that.
No question. And then one of our other favorite directors directed The Avengers. Have you seen that yet? Yeah, he's like a big shot now.
I know. Now everybody thinks he's the best thing ever. And what I loved was Jeffrey Overstreet's review, which I didn't read all of because I was like, I haven't seen it yet. I'm trying to avoid any obvious things I haven't seen. But he's like, Fox, are you looking at this? This is the guy whose most inventive thing ever was Firefly, and you canceled it after.
Oh,
I was like,
man.
I love that you're coming back to that. Thank you.
Can you imagine? Oh, you know what? There's a connection here that I just discovered. Because when I decided to do The Killer Angels, I went to the Wikipedia entry for The Killer Angels. Mm-hmm. And it says that Joss Whedon says that The Killer Angels was part of his inspiration for Firefly. Can you imagine?
I was just kind of so-so before, but now I'm super interested in this.
Yeah, but, you know, and I couldn't find a reference.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I was surprised by that. I'm not at all surprised that he read the book, because it is excellent. But, let me see if I can... I'm just calling that up here. And it's funny that the Wikipedia entry for this Pulitzer Prize has Joss Whedon in it.
Which am I more interested in? The Joss Whedon endorsement.
Yeah. Here's the direct quote from Wikipedia. It says, "The Firefly science fiction television series was developed by Joss Whedon after reading The Killer Angels. Homage to Shara's novel was paid in the series' final episode, Objects in Space." And I can't tell you right now, that's one of my favorite episodes, but I can't tell you right now what in that has to do with The Killer Angels.
What was the episode? Which
Objects in Space is the one with the bounty hunter where he comes in and... sneaks onto the ship.
Doesn't everyone love that one best?
Yeah, that's one of the best shows, yeah.
Yes.
So it gives us a reason to watch that again, too.
It does. We're probably going to have to talk about that series. There's a couple of TV series that we're going to have to just inclusively say, let's discuss at some point.
Right.
And that's definitely one.
Oh, yeah, and then here's another paragraph from Wikipedia. This is funny. So he never... Would Joss Whedon ever be in the same paragraph as General H. Norman Schwarzkopf?
Okay.
Okay, here's the paragraph. General H. Norman Schwarzkopf described The Killer Angels as the best and most realistic historical novel about war that I have ever read. The filmmaker Ken Burns has mentioned the influence of the book in developing his interest in the Civil War and his subsequent production of the PBS series on the subject. The book has also been cited by Joss Whedon as the original inspiration for his science fiction Western hybrid series Firefly. And again, there's no reference. It just says that. So
Schwarzkopf, Ken Burns, Joss Whedon. Okay. How could I not love it?
That's right.
I'm ready.
Yeah, when I picked the book, I had no idea. No idea. So
it was serendipitous.
It must be. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Serendipity is my stripper name. That's from Warehouse 13. Whenever I hear that word, that's what I think of.
Okay.
Which is also loosely connected to Joss Whedon. Because Warehouse 13.
Oh.
One of the writers of Firefly was one of the main people who developed Warehouse 13.
Well, and that's one I still have to see. I write it down. Well,
to be honest, I really enjoyed seasons 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Season 3 didn't really work for me.
They lost it.
I think that they did. You know, we'll see if... I'm pretty sure it's been renewed. And it's a summer series. They always show it in the summer. So starting up here pretty soon. And they only do 13 episodes per season.
Okay. Well, it's cable, right? So
Yeah.
That's more their thing. Well...
Yep, I'm hoping it gets really good again. Because it was a really cool premise. It's just that the premise wore out.
Well,
it's one of those things that, you know... in the United States, we do these series that, you know, they try to last for 7 years or however long they want to do it. And I don't know if England's changed, but it used to be that, you know, they would do these sets of like 10 episodes or 6 episodes or whatever. It seems to me that's a much better way to do stuff.
Yeah.
You do that. And then 2 years later, you may do another 10, you know,
get all the actors back together.
Right.
Again.
And it just seemed like, it seemed like a better way to do it from a story standpoint, because you would have this 10 episode arc, and then you would do those 10, and then they'd show those 10. And then, you know, if you had a sequel, you could do another 10 or something. But yes, in the United States, we just go on and on and on and on.
Well, we're
until
driven
it dies.
By capitalism here. So you have to,
yeah, until
I always feel
it dies
like any show that
death.
Gets past 2 seasons and is still good is a bonus. And I was thinking about Community.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is, has just been renewed for 13 shows for season 4.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
Only
and
13,
I said,
though, huh?
Oh, only 13. Mm-hmm. And Tom said, yeah, well, what they're doing is they're renewing those for a shorter time so they have money to put into new shows so that if something drops out, then they just go, okay, now we'll renew you for the second 13.
Hmm.
But which I thought was probably good business practice, actually. But I was thinking of how Community has always been uneven.
Yeah, yeah.
But there have been some amazing episodes.
Yeah, the episodes where there's episodes of this show that are the best television I swear I've ever seen.
Agreed.
And one of them was the Pillow Town episode.
Yes.
Where, you know, talking about Ken Burns, they're doing a documentary of this battle between Pillow Town and Blanketsburg.
Right.
And they do it in this documentary Ken Burns style.
Oh, it was perfect.
And it was just, I've seen that show at least 3 times. I just watch it. Love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah. And then it's funny the creativity that breaks out. And what you could see is the ones that are in between, which are less even, and they're still fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just like, well, they're really concentrating on these other things.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like the Law and Order one.
Right, right.
Might be one of my favorites ever.
That's funny. Yeah, the episode about chaos theory, remedial chaos theory, where they're at a table and the pizza guy rings the doorbell and they need to decide which one of them is going to go get the pizza. So they throw a die into the air and create 6 different universes.
Yeah.
And something crazy happens in every single one of them. And, I mean, oh, it was brilliant.
Yeah. And then they circle back around to that in a later episode.
And they do, I think they mention it kind of, you know, off and on. But the whole, you know, it's like many episodes of what's that? The Jimmy Stewart Christmas movie. It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, and that's what I thought of. You know, Jeff. It's Jeff's turn, right? And Jeff leaves the room, and the entire of all of the people changes.
Everything changes.
And like a little microcosm of, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, you know, what it looks like when you're not there. And in Jeff's case, it wasn't bad.
Well, it's funny because when we were watching that, and then we'll have to stop talking because everybody's going to be bored but us. But I guess, and this is going to be the 3-hour episode.
Right.
And you'll be late for work. But anyway, the episode, what I kept thinking the whole time was, because this portrays my roots, was Star Trek, where they beam in the transporter and they're in the parallel universes where Mr. Spock is evil and everything. And I was like, oh, I think of this. And we're kind of laughing. And then later it comes back in direct tribute to that. And I was like, oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Yeah, the geek in me is here.
Yeah.
So
just great. Yeah. Yeah. So keep going, community.
Yeah. Definitely, I'll take it for the ones that are uneven are not that bad.
Yeah, without question.
Which is damning with faint praise, I suppose. They're worth watching. Let's put it that way.
All worth watching. Yep.
Yep. Well.
All right.
Guess in our meandering way, we've reached the end.
We have. Thanks for hanging out with us, folks. Yes. See you in a couple of weeks for Rear Window.
Yes.
Starring Jimmy Stewart.
Watch it and listen.
Yes. Fantastic.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.